water is turned on. The artificial waterfall stopped running. James visualized fractured pipes blocked with sucking fibres. Now he could see what was happening outside. The street surface was heaving like the sea. Saplings were pushing up between the cracks. Of course, he reasoned, they had sunlight. His tree didn't. All it had was the muted grey light that came through the dome 4 stories up. Dead light. But what could you do? You could do this. The lights had stopped running because the power was off, but it was only 4 flights of stairs. James carefully shut his lunchbox and padded back to his cart, where he selected his longest broom. People were pouring out of the building, yelling. James moved amiably against the flow like a salmon going upstream. A white framework of girders, which the architect had presumably thought made a dynamic statement about something or other, held up the smoked glass dome. In fact, it was some sort of plastic, and it took James, perched on a convenient strip of girder, all his strength and the full leverage of the broom's length to crack it. A couple more swings brought it down in lethal shards. The light poured in, lighting up the dust in the plaza so that the air looked as though it was full of fireflies. Far below, the tree burst the walls of its brushed concrete prison and rose like an express train. James had never realised that trees made a sound when they grew, and no one else had realised it either, because the sound is made over hundreds of years, in waves of 24 hours from peak to peak. Speed it up, and the sound a tree makes is vroom. James watched it come toward him like a green mushroom cloud. Steam was billowing out from around its roots. The girders never stood a chance. The remnant of the dome went up like a ping-pong ball on a water spray. It was the same all over the city, except that you couldn't see the city anymore. All you could see was the canopy of green. It stretched from horizon to horizon. James sat on his branch, clung to a liana, and laughed and laughed and laughed. Presently, it began to rain. The Kappa Marki, a whaling research ship, was currently researching the question, how many whales can you catch in 1 week? Except that today there weren't any whales. The crew stared at the screens, which by the application of ingenious technology could spot anything larger than a sardine and calculate its net value on the international oil market, and found them blank. The occasional fish that did show up was barreling through the water as if in a great hurry to get elsewhere. The captain drummed his fingers on the console. He was afraid that he might soon be conducting his own research project to find out what happened to a statistically small sample of whaler captains who came back without a factory ship full of research material. He wondered what they did to you. Maybe they locked you in a room with a harpoon gun and expected you to do the honourable thing. This was unreal. There ought to be something. The navigator punched up a chart and stared at it.
"Honourable sir," he said.
"What is it?"
said the captain testily.
"We seem to have a miserable instrument failure. Seabed in this area should be 200 metres.
"What of it?"
"I'm reading 15,000 metres, honourable sir, and still falling."
"That is foolish. There is no such depth."
The captain glared at several million yen's worth of cutting-edge technology and thumped it. The navigator gave a nervous smile.
"Ah, sir," he said, "it is shallower already."
Beneath the thunders of the upper deep, as Aziraphale and Tennyson both knew, far, far beneath the abyssal sea, the Kraken sleepeth. And now it was waking up. Millions of tons of deep ocean ooze cascade off its flanks as it rises.
"See," said the navigator, 3,000 metres already."
The Kraken doesn't have eyes. There has never been anything for it to look at. But as it billows up through the icy waters, it picks up the microwave noise of the sea and the sorrowing beeps and whistles of the whale song.
"Ah," said the navigator, 1,000 metres.
The Kraken is not amused.
500 metres?
The factory ship rocks on the sudden swell.
100 metres?
There is a tiny metal thing above it. The Kraken stirs, and 10 billion sushi dinners cry out for vengeance. The cottage windows burst inward. This wasn't a storm, it was war. Fragments of jasmine whirled across the room, mingled with the rain of file cards. Newt and Anathema clung to one another in the space between the overturned table and the wall.
"Go on," muttered Newt. "Tell me Agnes predicted this."
"She did say he bringeth a storm," said Anathema.
"This is a bloody hurricane. Did she say what's supposed to happen next?"
2315